When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a new year, and that means new episodes on 3 and 30. I'm so excited, and I decided to do something a little different and super fun this week to kick off the new year. I'm calling it Sleep Week. Now, I don't know about you, but getting my babies, toddlers, and elementary schoolers to sleep has a huge impact on my happiness as a mother. And it has caused me serious stress, especially with those newborn babies when I felt like I didn't know what I was doing and I was so tired. And so I wanted to bring on a couple of serious experts. We're talking PhDs, master's degrees, to teach us how to get our little ones to sleep. Now, this episode isn't going to apply to teenagers, so if you're moms of teens, I'm sorry. I'm sure that there's a whole host of sleep problems that happen then, and we should probably get some experts on to teach us about that at a later time. But I would love, love for you to pass these episodes along to any new mom that you have in your life, or even a seasoned mom, but who has a new baby or a toddler who may be struggling with sleep. Our first episode today is with our fan favorite, Dr. Katie Penry, who has a PhD in maternal and infant mental health. She's been on the podcast. This will be her third time. Her first episode with us, episode 23, How to Stop Looking at Your Phone So Much and Why It Matters, is far and away, by thousands and thousands of downloads, the most popular episode that has ever aired on 3 and 30. So if you missed that, make sure you go back and listen. Her follow-up episode to that is episode 41, How to Really See Your Children and Help Them See You. And then today she is going to teach us 3 facts you must know about infant sleep. Now, that's not all. On Thursday, we're going to have a follow-up episode with another sleep expert. Marietta Paxton is a licensed marriage family therapist who specializes in helping families get their children to have great sleep habits. She's going to be focusing more on the toddler and elementary years. So this is a super exciting week. It's a little bit different than what we typically do here on the podcast, but I thought it would be a fun thing for the new year. I did want to give you one disclaimer before we start. I feel like sleep methods can be something that is very controversial amongst mothers because it's so personal. How we want our babies to sleep, where we want them to sleep, how we want to bond and attach with them in those cuddly, sleepy times. Moms get really fired up about their preferred method of sleep training or not sleep training. And if there is anything that I shy away from in this podcast, it is anything controversial. I never want anybody to feel judged. I never want anybody to come away feeling like I was trying to stir up a fiery topic. So please know that as we head into this episode about newborn sleep. If you have completely different opinions about sleep and things that work with your children, you do you. You just keep doing it because you're the mom and you have a right to the revelation and the insight for your particular children. So I just wanted to say that straight up, but I do hope that these episodes on sleep will be a benefit to some families out there who may be really struggling for answers. So with that long explanation, this is episode 60, 3 facts you must know about infant sleep. Welcome to 3 and 30, a podcast for moms who want to create more meaning in motherhood. Each 30-minute episode will feature 3 doable takeaways for you to try at home with your family this week. I'm your host, Rachel Nielsen. Thank you so much for being here. I'm back today with Dr. Katie Penry, who is a specialist in infant and maternal mental health. She has a PhD in clinical psychology. She has done tons of extra training, specifically focusing on infants ages 0 to 3 years old at the Brazelton Institute. And she is a wealth of information about the needs of infants. So I asked her to come on to do a special episode today about infant sleep, because that is something that I know a lot of moms have a lot of stress over, trying to get their babies to sleep. So Dr. Katie Penry, thanks for joining us again for another episode on 3 and 30.
I'm so excited to be here, and I'm so excited to be talking about infant sleep. I know that people are craving it.
I love that. And you have put together a PDF that, is it 25 tips
sleep
to
tips.
Infant
yeah.
sleep tips? And we will link to that in the show notes. I know a lot of parents will want to read all 25. Today, we're just going to focus on three major takeaways for infant sleep. And we're kind of going to do the episode a little differently today, where I'm going to give the takeaway and Dr. Penry, who's the expert, is going to weigh in and tell me whether or not I'm correct and give a little bit of the research and background on why it's true or not true. So kind of a fun, different episode. So this all stems from the fact that when my son Noah was a newborn, he was extremely colicky. He didn't nap well during the day. And then I really needed him to sleep at night because he was so fussy during the day that if I was going to be calm and patient and be with this crying baby all day long, I needed to get some sleep at night. So I was very anxious to, you know, get him sleeping through the night as quickly as I could and to do everything right. In fact, I was over anxious, I'm sure. I read every sleep book I could get my hands on. I kept the little sleep logs and tried to track patterns. And in the end, there's some major takeaways that I took from the various books that I read. And now, like, my sisters and my friends will call me and say, tell me their situation and say, okay, what would you do since you've read all these sleep books? So that's a little background. And I think the two books that were the most helpful for me were Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child.
So good.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad that's has the expert stamp of approval. And then the other one was Happiest Baby on the Block by Harvey Karp.
Unstoppably awesome. Those two books right there are probably two of my favorites. They're by pediatricians that just have a lot of great experience and who have worked in academic hospitals doing research. So it's like they not only have this practical hands-on experience with real babies and real parents, they actually have conducted research to back up what they're saying. So I am for, like, hands down, both of those books. The other book that I really love, and I know that this one is kind of not so instructional, it's definitely not one that you're going to go to if you're in the middle of a ton of sleep problems, but Bringing Up Bebe by Pamela Druckerman, which is actually just, it's a memoir. And of course, I'm such a sucker for memoir. It's my favorite genre next to picture books. But you know, she has this really awesome take on just the ease of being with a baby. And there's something about her style of writing that I think is really relaxing for new mothers. Just to say, because she introduces the idea of a whole other culture that, you know, not every culture raises babies or helps them sleep in the same way, which kind of loosens up this construct we have that our culture, our way is the only way. Just seeing another person's experience of a different culture is really powerful, I think, for a lot of mothers because it kind of gives them the freedom to relax into their own instinct. So I would say the two books that you mentioned and then Bringing Up Bebe. Just relax into your instincts. It's going to be okay.
And I will link all of those in the show notes if people are interested in finding those titles. And I did also want to mention The Happiest Baby on the Block has a DVD version that is 30 minutes. And I recommend that more often to stressed new moms than the book because it's so much easier to watch a 30-minute DVD than to read a whole sleep book. Plus, it's something you can watch with your spouse, which I think is huge with your partner. And it shows Dr. Karp, right? Harvey Karp?
Yes, that's right.
And it shows him doing the different techniques of the swaddle and the shushing of the babies. And it shows him, it talking about all of the major components of his book. I feel like it's basically like the awesome Cliff Notes review of his book. So I'll link the DVD as well for people who would be interested in getting that.
Right, because that book is actually, he calls them the five S's of soothing. It's actually how to initiate your child's soothing reflex so that they can calm themselves, sleep well, and be relaxed. He also talks a lot about infant reflexes and how you can work against those so that the child can be more successful at self-soothing. And the thing that you're saying about the DVD and then that you're including the partner, empowering your partner to be able to soothe your baby is game changing.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And I will say that my first son, Noah's adopted, and my husband and I watched the DVD while we were waiting. Like, we were in Utah waiting for Noah to be born, and we watched the DVD, and then Noah was born, and he was like screaming one night in the hospital, and Noah's birth parents called to us. We were staying in the room next door, and she called me in the middle of the night, and she's like, "Can you come help me with this baby?" And I went over there, and I swaddled him up, and I did the five S's, and she was like, "You are a miracle worker. How did you know how to do that?" And I was like, "Thank you, Dr. Karp." Like, because I'd watched that DVD, I knew how to help him. Yes. And it was just like this great moment of all of us feel like I felt prepared to help him. And it actually worked in that. It's not like it always works in every situation, like a miracle, but it did in that situation. And it was awesome.
So you felt really empowered.
Grateful. Yes.
I love it. You felt you were able to feel powerful, intuitive, skillful, and then you were able to comfort his birth mother. Like, this is going to be okay.
Yes.
Forget about it. I love it. Great story.
Yeah. It was awesome. Okay. So the first takeaway that I took actually from that book, The Happiest Baby on the Block, or from that DVD, was his concept of a fourth trimester, which he talks about how the first 3 months of a baby's life, kind of think of it as your fourth trimester, and that you can't spoil a baby in the first 3 months of their life by holding them too much, or letting them sleep, or it's like just relax and enjoy your baby and let them sleep when they want to sleep and comfort them, and don't worry about spoiling them in that first 3 months, the fourth trimester. What would you add to that, or what's the science behind that?
Well, just biologically speaking, human babies are born very early because of the size of the human brain and the human head. And so really, we're just talking about the design of the human. The babies are born quite early, and then what they need is a continued kind of womb environment. I mean, we're not looking for a baby to really come alive, be really involved with the world for the first 3 months, because they're still almost gestating. And so the things about the womb, the loud whooshing noise, the really tight swaddle, the kind of jiggling movement, all are really soothing and actually initiate reflexes in the fetus and will do so for the first 3 months of your baby's life. That's why Harvey Karp's method works so well, because it's initiating some of these fetal reflexes that still last into this fourth trimester. Absolutely. You cannot spoil a baby any more than spoiling a baby in utero. That's, you know, you would say, of course, that's ridiculous. This baby has to be in utero. Well, you know, you can't hold it too much in those first 3 months outside of uterus.
Right. You said in the beginning, because of the size of the human brain and the size of the human head, meaning that the mother has to be able to birth the baby, right? The baby can't get bigger.
Because of the size. Right.
And so, whereas other mammals have their babies longer in gestation.
That's right. Well, because we're upright, the way that our birth canal is shaped, the way that our hips have to support us in an upright position, they can't, you know, if we were on all fours, our hips could be wider, our birth canal could be wider. You hear what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, totally. And so when they are born, you know, we can still treat them like they're kind of in utero. And that just gave me so much peace as a new mom with actually not with Noah, because I was too stressed out and trying to like, I was like reading the books about like, get him on a schedule at like a week old. And that was ridiculous to me. And then once I started reading this, it helped me to kind of calm down. And then when Sally was born, I just enjoyed her. I just, for the first three months, and held her and snuggled her as much as I wanted and didn't worry about getting her on the perfect schedule right away. And I did notice by the time that she was closer to 3 months that she was starting to kind of naturally move into more of a routine and a schedule, which I took note of and I worked with and did start to try to, you know, move her schedule towards my schedule. But just having that permission to just enjoy her that first little while was huge. And I think helped a lot with, I was struggling with some postpartum depression and anxiety. And it just helped that I wasn't also stressing about trying to get my baby on a schedule. Yes. I just could just hold her and bond with her and snuggle with
her. I love it. The idea of the fourth trimester gave you permission to enjoy her. And you noticed that she got on her own schedule over time. You didn't have to worry about it.
Right. Yeah. What about if your baby is colicky and crying a ton and you need to put them down and walk away? And so if it's during that fourth trimester time, are you going to ruin them? Because they should be like in utero, you know? Like, so tell us kind of the opposite of that.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. I was like, no, interrupted you. You really, I mean, I love what you had actually said, Rachel, is that you had this colicky baby who was having a hard time during the days. And so nighttime sleep, it's like you knew that in order for you to be optimally responsive and consistent, you needed to take care of yourself and make sure that you were getting rest. So here's what I'll say to that. Controlled crying in a consistent, warm and loving home, no research says that that ruins the baby or that that's going to do long-term damage. But exhausted and inconsistent caregiving that's struggling with exhaustion and mood disorder, there is research that says that's not okay. So if you have to put your baby down and walk away so that the baby can be safe and you can be more responsive and more consistent, then that is the better choice.
And what about, this may or may not make it into the episode. What about like if they're really crying at night and you need to sleep in order to be that optimal caregiver in the first 3 months, like how much of that should you allow or what other coping strategies can you have? What would you say there?
Okay. Well, I think that, again, controlled crying at night in the first 3 months in the middle of a consistent caregiving environment, you're going to have to play it by ear. Typically, you don't want your kids, your babies, to be crying for very long periods of time. Definitely never over 45 minutes, probably. But sometimes it has to happen. And so here's really what I'm going to say. And I think that you should put this in the podcast because I want to give women out there permission to hire an expert to supervise them with their baby. And I know that that sounds like supervising, that sounds gross, but I had a baby with a protein allergy. He was in a lot of pain every time that he was supine, every time that he was on his back. And it took us a while to figure out the source of the pain, okay? Because it wasn't like a reflux. It was an actual gestational pain caused by protein allergy. And so I hired somebody to actually get professional eyes on the situation. How long can I let this baby cry? And they were asking me stuff like, well, how many calories is he getting during the day? How much does he weigh? These kind of things. So it was almost like an individualized answer to that question. How long is okay? And they were watching me. They were watching him. I know that not every mother can do that, but honestly, I am such an advocate for seeking professional help whenever you're having extreme sleep problems. Like if you're not sleeping at all, if you absolutely can't, then I'm going to say you need to be empowering your spouse, pumping as best you can to give him a feed so that at least you can piece together some time. Going in for a pact like, okay, well, we're just only at most, I'm only going to get 4 hours of sleep a night because you're going to take one waking and I'm going to take the other. And so we're just going to power through this.
Right. I had thought like, if you can't hire a professional to help you, I think it's time to be very honest with the people in your life and say, I need help, you know, and have grandma come and help at night for a little while, or maybe you have a best friend or someone in the church community that you could reach out to and say, like, can you come sleep at my house for a night, you know, or I mean, that's so vulnerable to ask that, but if you are mentally suffering, then you need to get, and you need to sleep. There are people who can help you. I remember when I had really bad postpartum anxiety with Sally, I was trying to breastfeed her and I wasn't producing enough milk. She wasn't growing. I was so stressed out. I needed to sleep. I couldn't sleep because I was so anxious. Anyway, I remember saying to my mother-in-law, she's like, you go to bed and I will take care of this baby. And I was like, well, what if I can't feed her? Like, what if I don't make enough milk and I can't feed her? And she's like, we will feed this baby. We will mix some formula and we will feed this baby, you know? Right. And that was such a relief to me to just know she's in good hands. She's not going to starve. If she has to drink some formula, it's not the end of the world. And, you know, in the end, I never did make much milk. And so she did end up drinking formula and she's just fine, you know?
Yeah,
so,
of course.
But it took, I was in a place of like, I couldn't see rationally. I was so sleep deprived. I was so hormonal. And it took my mother-in-law saying like, we are going to take care of you and your baby. So I really hope that people can reach out and find somebody to come and help them, or hire a professional to come and help them if they're really struggling with sleep or any other issue in that first little while.
Right. I mean, it's hard to think rationally, but during those moments, but whenever you see, I mean, it's like 77% of the deaths that occur to children due to maltreatment and abuse are like kids younger than 3. I mean, it's because, you know, you got to think about whenever these women are in so much pain that they're really hurting their children. Don't you kind of wish that was the thing that they spent their money on, like a professional?
Yes.
You know, like it's okay. If you have to talk to your bank and get a small loan, I don't care. Like that's the thing you do. That's it. You know, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel really, absolutely ask for help. And if you make a birth plan, also make a post-birth sleep plan. Like if things fall apart, here's who I'll ask. Here's how I will ask them. And here's how I will know that I need help.
Yeah. You said that you studied at the Brazelton Institute and that their goal there was to keep babies alive and to have moms thrive, right?
That's right. Pretty much.
And when I heard that, I was thinking, keep babies alive, like that, shouldn't that just be a given? But is that what is this what you mean? Like shaken baby or different things like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Infant mortality rates are higher in America than they are. I mean, I haven't looked at this statistic in a year, but last time I checked, they were higher than any other industrialized nation. There is no reason that our infant mortality rate should be what they are, but they are so high because of mistreatment, lack of education, shaken baby, all of this stuff that really could be prevented if we would just empower our mothers to seek help, help them know when they need help, help them understand when their babies need help. I mean, this is just the basics, and we really can make a huge difference just through simply helping women seek help.
Yeah. So important. I'm so glad that you're spreading that message. So, and I'm not sure how we got off on that from takeaway one about the fourth trimester. We went from just enjoy your baby and snuggle her and relax to like some pretty dire things there. But I think it's really important. It is very important to recognize that if you need help, get help for the sake of your baby.
So, I mean, we've already done basically three takeaways. You had this first takeaway, which is understand the fourth trimester. You can't spoil a baby. Second was learn when you need to get help. And third is like, here's how you get help. Here's why help is important. You know, we've just gone through it all a lot.
Done. We can be done. Three takeaways within one takeaway.
Bam, bam, bam.
Well, I do have two more though.
Okay, go for it.
So my second takeaway is that once they are ready for more of a routine, after they're kind of out of that fourth trimester, to remember that the window of wakefulness is really short. Mm-hmm. This is from the book Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child. He talks about how babies really can only be awake for about 2 hours before they're tired out and they need to go back to sleep. And I remember that being mind-blowing as a mom. I'm like, he just woke up. Like, what? He needs to sleep again? But it was so true that when I started soothing him and heading him back towards sleep around an hour and a half to 2 hours, that he would settle so much easier and he wouldn't get overstimulated and he would be ready to sleep again. Mm-hmm. So tell us more about that.
I think that you hit the nail on the head. If I didn't say another thing, and all of you parents out there heard that an hour and a half to 2 hours, you need to be soothing your baby and sending them back to sleep. This is in the first, 3 months, maybe 2 months of their life. Sending them back to sleep, you will avoid so much mood lability, so much crankiness, so much, quote, colic, so many sleep problems if you just manage the window of wakefulness. If your baby is crying a lot, inconsolable a lot, and consistently awake for more than 2 hours at a time, chances are it is not colic. Chances are it's exhaustion. Really, seriously, that's just good sound sleep science. You've said it all. You've said it perfectly.
Okay. And if you need to know how to soothe them back to sleep, I think you can refer back to the
Carp.
The five, the four S's by Harvey Karp about how to soothe a baby. And then also in Happy Sleep Habits, Healthy Child. Oh, wait, was it the other way around? Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child.
Yeah, there you go.
He talks about like the importance of having a little routine with them where they kind of start to recognize this is what we do before we sleep. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be really helpful as well. So that's all in that book. And then my third takeaway, and I think that this is huge because there's so much debate, I feel like, between whether to let your baby cry it out to learn how to sleep and sleep train them or not to. And moms can be really passionate and really heated on that. And it seems like from what I've read, and I wanted your opinion as this expert who has studied babies, who has a doctorate in this, it just seems like whatever you choose to do, be consistent. Don't let them cry it out one night and then the next night go in there, because then that's confusing them and
making it worse.
Whatever progress they made the night before, on sleep training is undone when you went in there. And so that was really for nothing the night before. And it's just back and forth and in and out. And so I just felt like, choose your method and do it. Is that what you would say?
I would say, yeah, I would say go for it. I mean, always you want to be responsive to the needs of your baby. If they, and again, this is why I say it's okay, encouraging people to seek consultation if they need it, if they're really in a bind, because maybe the child does have some kind of special need or special accommodation that needs to be made. So you ultimately always want to be responsive, but once you decide on what needs to happen, yes, just be consistent. Be consistent. Children, babies who sleep train actually cry less than babies that don't. So, but maybe there are benefits of children that don't sleep train. So just kind of let go of the judgment and support one another's decisions so that all of us can just be consistent and have the persistence to really drive whatever we're doing home.
And I did feel like, so I did, we did do Cry It Out with Noah. And it was 3 days. And that's what I always tell moms.
Yes.
The first night they cry the longest. The second night it's a little less. The third night it's a little less. And then it's over. Mm-hmm. At least that's been mm-hmm. my experience. I felt like I had to do that method with him because of what I said earlier about, like,
yes.
I desperately needed to be able to take care of him during the day.
And exactly.
So once he was old enough, I wasn't sleep training him at 3 months,
right.
you know, but once he was eating some solids, I think it was around 6 months that I did it with mm-hmm. him. And the second night I was like dying, but I just reminded myself, if I go in there right now, then that's mean because yeah. that means that I let him cry last night for no reason,
right.
you know? And so I'm like, I got to do this. And it worked wonders. And he became a great sleeper and a much happier mm-hmm. baby. And our relationship improved so much.
That's important. I was just going to say, see what you just said, our relationship improved and he became a much happier baby and he was sleeping better. Those benefits, you just can't argue with that.
Yeah. And whereas with my second, with Sally, she was a much easier going, calm temperament baby during the day. And so I didn't mind getting up in the night as much because I didn't need to be so like on my game during the day. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really have to let her cry it out. We sort of did a different sleep method with her. Mm-hmm. And she didn't sleep through as early. It was like probably 10 or 11 months before she slept all the way through the night. But I was fine getting up with her once or twice a night to feed her. So I think it just depends
right.
on the baby, on the phase of life you're in. Mm-hmm. But to just be consistent and to not one day be like, okay, we're doing this. I'm just going to let him cry tonight. And then the next night go in there. Cause I just feel like that's so inconsistent.
No,
for
you
babies.
Need to gird your loins. You need to be fully, if you're going to do Cry It Out. Like, a lot of times, honestly, this is the truth. A lot of times people who do Cry It Out, their baby usually does not cry more than 15 or 30 minutes, but they will tell you the baby cried all night long for hours and hours and hours because there's just something. I mean, you know, your brain, the maternal brain is just neurologically wired for that noise to be super abrasive and terrifying. So I always say, if you're going to do sleep training, you need to get a stopwatch and you need to actually time what is happening because you'll be surprised at how little they actually cry. It's okay.
Yeah. And is there, I mean, because I've also heard people say, like, there's all this evidence that says, like, that they won't attach. And if you let them cry it out, that it's so bad for their brains.
No.
And what do you think as an expert in the field?
That there is not a single scrap of evidence to indicate that a baby that is allowed to do controlled crying in a loving, warm, and consistent environment will have any kind of long-term neurological damage. There's nothing to indicate that. And if there is one or two studies, then it is it's what we call a filing drawer fallacy. It's one study in the affirmative out of thousands that say, no, I'm just absolutely pro-mother choice here. As long as she is consistently creating a warm and loving and responsive environment. If she has to do some kind of controlled crying, or if she chooses not to, if she chooses to co-sleep, it's her choice.
Yeah. And that's something else I'm so glad you brought up. If you love that relationship, whatever relationship you want to have with your baby, if you love it, do it. So like if you love co-sleeping, if you love attachment parenting, if you love having them right in your bed nursing all night, do it. But if it's driving you crazy, there's other options.
That's
so
right.
Don't think that you have to do it that way, even though it's making you crazy.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and for teaching us. And tell people about your baby course, because a lot of people who may be listening to this particular episode may be brand new moms.
Oh, sure.
Who are looking for this advice or maybe they're not new moms, but they have a baby. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the course that you have for infant care.
Okay, so I have a couple of things that I think that your listeners to this episode might really like. The first is afriendlyaffair.com/25sleep tips. And that's really just kind of a free opt-in for people who are listening to this episode and you want to know more about sleep. You got those 25 sleep tips. afriendlyaffair.com/sleep tips for you. And if you have a new baby and you want to know more about just their emotional and social development, you want to have the skills to help them sleep, the skills to help them thrive, the skills to help them attach, then you're going to want my Intro to Parenting course. I mean, it really is revolutionary. Most parenting courses focus on the physical needs of the baby. This really extends into the relationship in the maternal baby dyad and the paternal baby dyad and in the sociological, social-emotional health of the baby. I mean, it's awesome. And you can find that at afriendlyaffair.com/intro to parenting.
And I will have links to all of this and just as my own testimonial, everything that I've seen Dr. Penry do is phenomenal. I've been following her work for a long time. This is her third time coming on the podcast. I love what she does. So go check out her courses and I know you won't be disappointed. Thank you so much for giving us so much of your time and your expertise, Dr. Penry.
I love what you do, Rachel. Thank you for having me.
So that's it for episode 1 of Sleep Week, and I hope that you enjoyed that information about the babies, and I also hope that you'll be back on Thursday for information about toddlers, preschoolers, and elementary schoolers, particularly how to combat those bedtime battles that they often bring to us with compassion and empathy, but also standing our ground. Now, to recap the 3 takeaways that Dr. Penry and I discussed, first, during the first 3 months of your baby's life, remember they're essentially in what's called a fourth trimester, and you can treat them that way. You can love on them, hold them, rock them, shush them as much as you would like without worrying about spoiling them. That said, if you are struggling with postpartum depression or your baby is colicky or for whatever reason you can't hold them constantly and you do have to let them cry sometimes, it is okay, as Dr. Penry reminded us. Takeaway number 2 is that the window of wakefulness is extremely short for infants. We're talking 2 hours between the time that they wake up to the time that they need to go back to sleep. Dr. Penry mentioned in that episode up to 3 months. I really found this to be true for my babies up to 6 months. And then third, remember to just be consistent. No matter what method you believe in for sleep training or not, just stick with it instead of going back and forth out of frustration and exhaustion, because that is confusing to a baby to not know what to expect. It's also exhausting for you. I also want to remind you that Dr. Penry really encourages moms to seek out a sleep expert if you're really feeling desperate. And we are actually going to have a sleep consultant who does this for a living on the podcast on Thursday. So I hope you will be back for that, and I hope you have a restful couple of days with your family.